Thank you, George.
Exactly. Okay.
Today we will hear a talk on step 11. Please give a warm welcome to Joe F. from Los Angeles, California.
Hey, good morning, everyone. My name is Joe and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank, Sunny for coordinating everything with me. I think it was Lorraine who asked me to come out and speak. Sorry, these last couple weeks there's been a lot going on, so I haven't been the most organized as of late. But, it's always an honor and a privilege to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. Before getting sober, I usually just ask to get out. I've been kicked out of my parents' house. I've been kicked out of friends' houses, class, stores, friend groups. A band, the stairwells my drug dealers lived in, all because of how I behave when I'm drunk and under the influence of drugs. But, I haven't been kicked out of Alcoholics Anonymous yet. And, I've done just about everything your sponsors told you not to do in meetings of rooms of AA, and I've never been unwelcomed. And I'm very grateful for that. And, step 11 for me has always been one of those anomalous steps. The prayer aspect came pretty simple to me. My sponsor in the beginning just told me to hit my knees, ask God to keep me sober today. I can do that, right? But it's, that second component of the step, that being that of meditation. Sitting still to me, I've been sober since the 8th of August, 2013. And 10 and a half years later, just sitting still for any length of time is an anomalous and unachievable thing. It's something that runs so counterintuitive to everything I do on a daily basis that, just the simple act of sitting and breathing is something incredibly challenging. But what I've found for me, at least, is in my own recovery and in my sobriety, it's a vital and essential tool. And it's not because of the sitting and breathing component, because for me, the key word of the 11th step is thought. A big reason why I meditate and pray on a daily basis, because it's an act of seeking God. Meditation for me is, quieting the mind, and prayer is, asking God for help and guidance. So, and only through quieting the mind have I been able to see God come into my life, and whenever those answers are ready to come, and meditation is indispensable to that. Step 11 is one of the bulkiest steps in our 12 steps. Sought for me is the key word, but also improve conscious contact with a power greater than ourself. It's not so much that I'm asking and quieting my mind, but it's a lot about improving conscious contact with God. So whenever those resentments come up, or those coincidences happen, or something's going, wrong in my life, I'm able to spot God in all of it. And that's a huge component of that 11th step. So, I'm going to spend a little bit of time talk about my story, and I'll try and work the step into it some way or another. But, I was born in Los Angeles, California, to two parents, and that's not what makes me an alcoholic. From the ages of 18 months from birth, I was undergone a number of corrective and reconstructive surgeries. When I was 3 years old, my parents split up because my dad's an alcoholic. At four, I'm diagnosed with autism and thrown into the special educational school system. And at the age of five, my right foot stops growing and develops a high arch, resulting in terrible pain. I had until I was about, 14 years of age, and a limp that I still have to this day. And on, this chapter three, the second sentence, it says no one wants to believe that they're bodily and mentally different from the fellows. And that's what I'm being told from the medical community at Jump, right? And the good news is that's not what makes me alcoholic. That's not the reason why whenever I pick up a drink or a drug, you have never any idea what kind of Joe you're going to get next, whether you're going to get fun Joe, flirty Joe, funny Joe, smart Joe, dangerous Joe, psychotic Joe, suicidal Joe, angsty Joe, hormonally challenged Joe, or any combination of all the bad things, because I can never be all the fun stuff at once. You never have any idea what Joe you're going to get whenever I pick up a drink or a drug. But what those things did were very important for me. The first was it made me a victim, gave me reasons to drink long before I ever drank and used. Second thing it did was it established the sense of entitlement, because at a very early age, the tune is that I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy. I'm not intelligent enough. I can never operate in the world out there at any relatable level. And I'm going to need a little bit extra and a little bit more just to like be at that level of okayness that I see all of these people walking around Santa Monica operating at. And the third thing that it did for me was it established this barrier of entry to the world outside because I'm not good enough to compete at all the levels that I told you about. So, why even bother, And my parents did just the best they could to raise us, but my mother had an unreliable partner and she had a full-time job and couldn't take care of my younger brother and I. So she enlisted the help of a couple people to help raise us. And, from the ages of 4 to 14, the key parental figure in my life was this man named Harry, who would pick me up from class at the end of the day, who would help me with homework, who would instill upon me the significance and moral teachings that, a mother and father would, who'd do the cooking with me, who'd teach me the life lessons, right from wrong, and all the important stuff. And, on the 5th of January, 2010, day before my 14th birthday, he was arrested and deported on the account of him being an illegal alien. And, to this day, I don't know where the knowledge that drugs and alcohol were going to take away that pain and despair and dread that I felt in that moment, but I intuitively knew from, before I ever picked up the bottle and the pipe that drugs and alcohol were my solution. And drugs and alcohol, I sought. I hadn't been kicked out of that band yet. I knew they were sneaking liquor and smoking pot. And I asked them to let me in the festivities one day. And as we walked around my neighborhood and we passed that joint around, two more very equally important things happened for me. The first was that I was right about that suspicion. That pain and that despair and that dread just completely disappeared. It didn't matter that I wasn't funny enough, that I wasn't athletic enough, that I wasn't talented enough, that I wasn't smart enough, that I had autism, and that I was just different as far as I can see. Because for the first time in my entire life, I was just Joe in the world. And the second thing that happened was that barrier of entry disappeared. And I was, given free range just to live life for the first time in 14 years. And that sent me on a 3-year run, which, I ripped and roared the way burnouts and losers like us rip and roar. And I don't want to give too much into my drunkalogue. I'll give you some of the highlights because I did some embarrassing stuff around the age of 14, 15, while I was visiting a friend's at I was at a friend's house hanging out with him, and while his parents were on a date night, we decided to take a handful of their Ambien, pop a couple other pills, drink a quarter bottle of vodka between us 14, 15-year-olds, and I blacked out, came out of the blackout, started browning out, ran outside, threw up all over his parents' cars. They're coming back from their date night. Age of 15, my mom found where I was stashing all my stuff, threw it down the drain. All that we had left in the house were some pain medication dosed for a small dog kibble flavor. And I remember holding that bottle in my hand, worrying less and more about the fact if my mom's going to find the missing pill or not, and less about the fact that I still clearly remember what dog food tastes like. Age again, 15, 16, knocking back shots of tequila at 5 o'clock in the morning because I woke up early that day and I'm throwing together a science report last minute. And it's a science report on bats. And I thought it'd be a really cute idea when I got to class to print a picture to present in front of the whole class of a picture with a bat with his genitals exposed, and gave that re science report in front of the whole class. And, at the age of 16, I turned down a free all expense paid trip to Montreal, Canada, just to throw a house party at my mom's house, where I got so blackout drunk and so loaded that I ended up blacking out and passing out. And by the time I came to, I'd completely missed the party. And everyone told me what a great party it was, how they got wasted, how they fell in love, how they got laid. I didn't do that because at, 16 years old, I'm a full-blown alcoholic. I weigh 240 pounds. I got a club foot. And I'm a connoisseur of canine cuisine, so I'm effectively undateable. And, more importantly than that, at this point in my life, drugs and alcohol have stopped working for me. Drugs and alcohol have stopped being that connective tissue to me and you, and has stopped being that tool for me to communicate and participate in the world. Now drugs and alcohol are just bargaining chips for me. It's all I have to offer anything as far as like friendship and relationship goes. And unbeknownst to me, those bridges were slowly but steadily already starting to burn. And that led me down that last year of drinking and using that only the desperate and broken like us know about. That led me to all the people who I wanted to be friends with kicking me out of their lives because you heard how I behave. And the only groups of friends I had left would steal from me, rob from me, and hold knives to my throat, and lived in stairwells and smoked things that keep you up for a week and a half. And Finally, I just couldn't take any more of it, and I tried to kill myself, and I ended up in a wilderness treatment center in Utah at, the age of 17 on Valentine's Day, 2013. And what happened for me in that treatment center was unbeknownst to me. I'd worked the first three steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, but without, the remainder of the program, without, 4 through 12, within, 24 hours of getting out of that treatment center, I was loaded again. And at this point in my drinking and using, I'm sipping on this purple drink because the dealer told me it doesn't show up on a UA test. And I have a reliable source for booze. And now I'm drinking every day and I'm still doing all the same things over and over again, knowing full well I'm going to get, tested at home and at school. And it only took me 3 more months before I screwed it everything up again. Got kicked out of the house again, and on the 8th of August, 2013, ended up in treatment one last time. And only reason I'm still sober today is because of a higher power. I could hardly stay sober for a day, let alone the last 10 and a half years. And I want to say that, through doing inventory and the work here, that I see that the men and women in that treatment center did the best they could by us, but these were medical professionals trained to deal with, wayward children with mental health issues. And the only answers an alcoholic of my type has is drugs or alcohol and Alcoholics Anonymous. And you don't give me one or the other of those and you keep me physically sober, I'm a dead man walking. And that's how simple it was. And, I stayed physically abstinent there for about 8 months and got out. And, within 24 hours of getting out of that treatment center, the first person I called was my old drug dealer, who, unbeknownst to me, had gotten sober and was going to meetings of CA and AA. And my drug dealer Eskimoed me into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started following him around to meetings. And I heard what you guys said about sponsorship, about the steps, about the book. So by the time I shipped off and went off to trade school, I, instead of finding the nearest like party house or what have you, I'd found the nearest AA meeting hall. And, I got a sponsor right away, worked the steps right away. I sat on my fourth step for about 4 or 5 months. My sponsor told me there's no reason to take that long. I felt embarrassed and wanted to be friends. And I started reading him that fourth step. And, I found freedom in step five and step six and seven. And it was my experience that six and seven are the only reason I was able to work the second half of the eighth step and became willing to make amends to all those people on that list. And I started making those amends. I started taking inventory on a daily basis, and I really started to change my relationship with prayer. I really started to pray for others. I really started to meditate more often. I looked into different forms of meditation, but it was the 12th step in the service component that I was kind of slacking on. And just as soon as self-esteem started coming back and my life started to get okay, I realized that, AA just kind of got in the way of being in school, and being in school got in the way of playing video games and eating fast food the way I wanted to play video games and eat fast food. So by the end of school, I weigh 300 pounds. I'm sleeping 12 hours a day. I got a 2.3 GPA. I'm just showing up for class. That's all I'm really doing. And I haven't been to meetings in months, and I'd continue to live like that for the next couple of years, where from the years of 2016 to 2019, I think I only went to maybe one or two meetings and never worked a single step and stayed physically sober during that time. And, got back to LA, connected with the old Eskimo, went to one or two meetings with him, and it became really apparent early on that his behavior was changing. And before I knew it, I came to the knowledge that he had gone out and was drinking again. And now that, at the time, my conception of God's getting loaded, and, there's no reason for me to go to meetings. And, it took about 8 or 9 months after school before I landed my first internship at a recording studio. And, the best I could do at that job was show up on time. I was unmotivated. I was lazy. I had zero work ethic. And above all else, I'm scared to death that they're going to find me out. That they're going to learn that I'm a fake, that I'm a fraud, that I'm a loser, that I'm an idiot, that I can't do anything right. And I just can't hear that from anybody else. And that scares me to death. So, I mean, I just turned to showing up on time, putting in minimal effort and self-deprecating to get through the workday. And employers aren't really interested or like that kind of behavior. So they started slashing my hours back considerably. And, before I knew it, I was stuck at home all the time and had no idea how to get out of the house. And I knew something had to change around September in 2018. And I went about changing everything about my life, except, the whole going to meetings, sponsorship, and working steps things. Like, I lost about 110 pounds. I got a second chance at that job, worked my ass off. They gave me a promotion and picked up a second job slinging vape juice in the North San Fernando Valley. So I'm working 60, 70, 80 hours a week, 10, 12, 15 hour days, 6, 7 days a week. And I'm still getting busy for getting well because one of the vape job couldn't afford a part-timer anymore. So they cut me off. Other things became more important than doing my job at the studio. And they started slashing my hours back more and more and more. And one more time, I find myself stuck at home with no way out. And I just need one more shot, and I don't know what the hell to do anymore. And, God for me works in very funny ways. And on the 13th of July, 2019, what I believe today has been an act of God. And what he did for me in that moment was give me that opportunity. Some of the We had some rappers who were at the studio who wanted to get their hands on some psychedelic pizza toppings. And what I had heard was, if you could deliver the goods for us, we'll give you a job as our assistant. And I want to say right now, if that line of thinking makes any sense to you whatsoever, if you have a mind like mine that takes you from felony to career advancement, you're in the right place here tonight. You're not here by accident. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You're safe here. And, that's exactly what I did. And I got in my car, drove 30 miles from Zuma Beach to Venice Beach, going 30 over the speed limit. Because in theory, I'll get there 30 minutes faster. Now I get to the location exactly 4 minutes before my original Google Maps estimated time of arrival. I meet with the guy. He goes in the house. He gets the goodies. I throw him in the center console of my car. I hit the road again. I'm going 30 over the speed limit. And for whatever reason, at 11 o'clock at night, there's a ton of traffic on the Pacific Coast Highway. So, I'm just cutting everybody off to maintain my 80 mile per hour speed. And I cut off a police officer going 30 over the speed limit. And, I don't want to ever forget those red and blue lights on the pitch black Pacific Coast Highway that night, the fear in my heart and the sense of shame and guilt over what I had just done. And, he pulled me over and asked me all of those impossible to answer questions that police officers ask decent, hardworking folk like us. Questions like, how are you today? Why are you going so fast? Where are you heading? Do you know why I stopped you? And after what was most likely the longest 90 seconds of my life, he got in his car without so much as giving me a speeding ticket and drove off. And I mean, the crazy thing is at that point in my life, I don't believe in God. I don't believe that there was something working in that moment that has worked historically in my past that has prevented the worst possible situations from happening in my life. And I know today, beyond a reasonable doubt, what I am is an alcoholic. Because whenever I crack that book open at book studies or step studies or, with the men that I get to work with and have worked with, I see myself in the black parts of the page in sickness and in solution. I didn't need anybody explaining to me what pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization was, what anxious apartment felt like, and what it meant to be separate, different, and alone. Because I'd known what those feelings were my entire life, and now they're more prevalent and louder than ever before. And scary thing is still I'm not ready for help. It took me one more month of just stewing in that place of just absolute defeat and fear before finally, I crawled into my mom's room on a Sunday night and asked her for help. And she threw together, being the good Al-Anon that she is, she threw together a list of three meetings. And the first meeting on that list was for this crappy little green roof building on Ohio Avenue at a Sunday night meeting. And I just got in my car and drove and didn't really think much about it. And, I pulled into that side parking lot, parked my car, asked the guys outside of the kitchen if this is where the meeting was. And if anybody's new here or struggling tonight, to this day, that's the hardest thing I've ever had to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. Just asking those guys if I was in the right place at the right time is the most challenging thing I've had to do. And, I saved a seat in the back of the parking lot because talking to people is terrifying and I don't want to do it. And you know what happened is two sober members of that meeting came up and introduced themselves to me and welcomed me into AA. And the first guy that introduced myself became my first sponsor just on the grounds that he was a man with more time sober than I had. And what Josiah did was give me a foundation in Alcoholics Anonymous. He had me do a lot of that uncomfortable and lame crap, like go to 90 meetings, 90 days, go to the events that we have in AA. I'm not sure what you guys have in the Beacon group, but where I'm from in the Pacific group, we do watches, we have the yard, we have parties. I mean, we got a lot of events, and Josiah made me go to all those things. He made me do, get phone numbers at all the meetings I attended and to call guys on a daily basis. And, I got busy and swept away doing this Alcoholics Anonymous thing. And now, sometime after that 90-90, I'm pulling up to the synagogue late after work. And I park my car. I see him in the parking lot. He tells me that his girlfriend's pregnant. He's going to be a dad. And all I could feel for him in that moment was joy. And that's to this day one of the most beautiful things I've been given as a direct result of the steps, because it had been quite some time since I'd been fake happy for anybody, let alone genuinely happy. And, even though my sponsor's leaving and I need to get a new sponsor soon, I knew right away that I wanted his sponsor guy to take me through this process, as he was the one who had trained Josiah. And what Guy did for me was he instilled upon me the significance of the service component. He had told me, I was active in the fellowship, people saw me, I saw people, and I was working my steps, but I really wasn't doing anything for AA inside or outside of AA. I had my commitments, but I wasn't being inconvenienced. I wasn't going to rides. I was giving my friends rides, back to the Midnight Mission or other treatment centers, but I really wasn't being a maximum service. And, Guy put me to work and instilled upon me the service component. Then pandemic happened. I got sick pretty early on. And on, the 14th day of my quarantine, I call Guy to check in, and he tells me that he's going to be moving soon, that there's no telling when or where his industry is going to go back to any degree of sanity in LA. So he's moving to Vegas, where, things have remained unchanged relatively for his industry. And I felt sad, but I felt sad for the guys that he had been sponsoring for 4 or 5 years, sad for the people who'd saw him come in 17, 18 years ago, who he had seen come in and get sober over the last 7, 18 years. And that's just because you taught me how to have compassion. And based off a prior conversation I had had with my roommate, Adam, I knew right away that I started thinking about this guy, Mitch, who was the secretary in my Monday night meeting when I was new, who every time I saw him was just always doing stuff for AA, giving guys rides, working with guys, giving guys commitments at meetings. It was just always, busy, and I respected that. And, I called Mitch the next day, and I've been calling Mitch on a daily basis ever since then. And the work Mitch and I have done is, heavily rooted in 3, 6, 7. But we also do a lot of 11th step work because, the bottom line is that I get ahead of myself constantly. I don't like living in today right now. I mean, I've been having a really tough time, and I'm really dissatisfied and unhappy with my present. A lot of the work Mitch and I have done is just, how do I stay sober for the next hour? How do I just make it through one appointment to the next appointment? How do I not look at the day or week or my life as a whole and just go from right here, right now to the next moment? And, I'm really grateful for that. And Mitch didn't have a greater motive, like, starting a family or saving a career. He just kind of split. But, I respect him. I respect his commitment to AA, and I respect his service work. And, we've been doing this thing long distance now for the last, I would say, year and a half almost. And, the gig hasn't changed. I call him every day. I share with him the unheroic things I think about myself and others. And I do the things he tells me to do, whether I want to or not, whether I think it's a good idea or not. And that's just how I've been taught. So, I mean, I think I only got a couple minutes left, and I want to, at least go back to, the 11 steps, since you guys, I want to at least have an 11th step meeting, since that's what I'm here to talk about. And, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. I touched early on how the 11th step is not about, you pray and meditate and you get stuff. You get peace of mind, you get a calmness of heart, you get stuff. And for the longest time in my life, that's what I thought the whole act of meditation was. When I thought of all those, wise guys, or, I mean, I don't want to like sound insensitive or offensive or anything, but the, Tibetan monks who, just pray and meditate, and that's kind of what their lives are. I just thought, like, whenever I saw that level of meditation, what I first thing that comes to mind was enlightenment. First thing that comes to mind is just getting to this level of being wiser and smarter than everybody else floating 6 inches off the ground. And that's just what my concept of meditation was. But what I learned, especially, I don't know if this is true for other alcoholics. Maybe you guys can relate. I know this is the case for me, but at the end of the day, like, I still have trust issues. I still don't like sitting still. I don't like being right here, right now. It's gotten much better at times over these last 10 and a half years of being sober. And a big component of that is the 11th step work. And that's why the seeking component, that very first part of the first third of the step is, I mean, so important for me to come through, because there have been times where I, get my whole prayer down and I feel no connection, where maybe immediately after that I sit down and I meditate, whether it's a guided meditation, just 5 minutes silent, what have you. And again, I don't really feel much in the moment. But the funny thing is as I go about my day and I see those resentments start coming up, I catch them quicker and I can act on them quicker. When those other inception obsessions and self-destruction behaviors come up, I can catch them quicker and I can act about them quicker. And for me, that's a big part about the seeking aspect, because it's something that I do throughout my day more than once. And when I'm in a place of good spiritual fitness, it's something that I'm doing almost constantly. And no, I forget what the saying is off the top of my head. It's, the action doesn't care whether or not you take it. It just cares that you take it. And meditation for me is, prayer and meditation is a huge part of that. And if you're new here tonight, or if you're going through a hard time, or if this is just your morning meeting, I mean, I hope I could have, sh I hope I shared something useful, and I hope I didn't, just ruin your morning and blabber on. But thanks again for having me, and I'm looking forward to hearing what you guys have to share in the breakout room. So thanks for letting me be a service.